Ladies and gents, welcome back to the Relaxed Running Podcast. Tyson Popplestone here. Just want to give a little brief introduction to today's episode before I introduce it to you. This is something that I'd been flirting with over the last couple of weeks. I'd been writing some notes, writing some ideas, thinking about my own running, the running of the athletes that I coach and have coached over the last few years around areas of running that we often overlook, ignore, that really leads to significant breakthroughs in your own running performance. So I won't give too much of an intro. I do that in the episode. I wanted to let you know that we are super excited to let you know that we've partnered recently with Steigen Clothing. They've become a supporter of the Relaxed Running Podcast. If you don't know Steigen, they're an Australian-based company created by Louis Rowan, an Australian Commonwealth Games athlete from 2006, high-class athlete I used to look up to. They started as a socks brand, I'm pretty sure, and still their socks are some of the most highly renowned in the world of distance running. They're comfortable, they're breathable, they have a blister-free guarantee. I mean, it's the reason that so many of the top runners run in Steigen. They are a very high-quality product. More than that, Steigen is known for their high-quality running clothing. So for you as a listener to the Relaxed Running Podcast, these guys have put together a 15% coupon code only for the next couple of weeks. So if you're interested in getting any new running clothes, I highly recommend particularly their socks. From my own running experience, enter the coupon code RR for Relaxed Running. That's RR2024, RR2024. On exit, you'll get a 15% discount on anything and everything at their website. Hit the link in the description to this episode to take advantage of that. But for now, enjoy this episode with myself sharing a few simple fundamental game changers that you can make to see significant breakthroughs in your own running performance. I've just been doing some brainstorming on what I believe are the biggest learning curves for an athlete who's found themselves in a performance plateau, whether it's they've reached a certain point, they're not seeing any more progress, or they just feel as though they're slow, they're sloppy, they're not really breaking through, they haven't even seen the breakthrough that they were originally aiming to get. I mean, the truth is, regardless of where you're at in your running journey, whether you're brand new to the sport or you're an Olympian, we all go through phases, don't we, where progress isn't happening as fast as what we would like it to. And it's not limited to running performance. I mean, you could swap the word running with any area of our life that we're actually passionate about, and we start to see, or we, if we're honest with ourselves, we'll realize that there's times in our career or in our pursuit of improvement in that goal where the progress isn't happening fast enough. And isn't it true that when you've actually locked your eyes on a particular goal, the progress never seems to happen quickly enough? I know I started running when I was just almost 13 years old. I've just turned 37, which means I've had 24 years in the sport. And over the course of those 24 years, everything that I want to go through with you today, I've made the mistake, or I have, I've sort of fell in and out of using consistently or understanding consistently. So I say that, first of all, hopefully raise your attention to the fact that these have taken me 24 years to learn. And my goal today as a coach is to save you 24 years, hopefully more than that, and just give you these in one 25-minute episode. I believe these are five of the most helpful foundational elements to seeing running improvement, regardless of the level that you're competing at. Now, you're going to go through phases where some of them make sense, some of them are more relevant to you right now than others, but I'd encourage you to write these down, whether it's in your training journal, in your phone, wherever it is you keep your notes, and just keep yourself accountable to these things. Even ask yourself the question as to how effectively you're doing each of these things. So with all of that said, I've got five things written down that I want you to focus on if you've found yourself stuck or you're just not seeing the improvements that you think you're capable of making. So before we launch it, I'll say whenever I start working with a new athlete, whenever I start coaching a new athlete, I like to get a bit of an idea of not only their history in the sport, their injuries, their best times, their goals. I like to just develop a bit of an understanding about where it is this athlete sees their running going. What phase of running are they in right now? And the reason I like to do this is, firstly, for me, it gives me a bit more clarity on what it is the athlete's actually trying to achieve. But beyond that, it actually forces the athlete to start to form some kind of picture in their mind about what it is that they're actually aiming towards. And that point leads me to our very first point, creating a plan. Now, if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, this is not going to be a new concept. In fact, the very idea is foundational to improvement in any area. The old saying, it's very hard for a ship to reach its destination if it doesn't know where the destination is. You just become lost in the middle of the ocean. You can get thrown around by the highs and lows, the tides. It gets very tricky if you don't know where it is that you're trying to hit. So step one is, if you found yourself in a little bit of a plateau, hey, what are you actually aiming towards? Sometimes we can become so hard on ourselves in these moments that we're not seeing particular progress, but we haven't even given ourselves a benchmark or clarity on what progress really looks like. And so progress, or a plan in the biggest sense, or in most cases, means, hey, what is the race that we're actually aiming towards? I would encourage you, if you're in a situation where you've been training relatively consistently for a while now, your body's in good working order, you're not dealing with injuries, is to clarify, hey, what is the race? I've got a couple of athletes who are getting ready to run the Ballarat Marathon here in Victoria, Australia, in about 4 weeks' time. And that has not been something that we've just come up with sporadically in the last couple of months. That's something that 7 or 8 months ago we listed as a key event. Now, the beauty with that is, for the last 8 months, even though we've had little stepping stone races along the way, we've known that we don't need to be at the best of our ability in those stepping stone races. In fact, sometimes those races just formulated a part of a training week in which they were required to have a good hard hit out, even though we didn't necessarily taper for that race. And I say that to say, if you can clarify exactly what your goal is, it means you don't have to be at 100% of full flight. You don't have to be at your best every single week. You simply have to be in the part of the plan that we're in. So if you don't have a plan, you're just going out sporadically and doing some training and keeping fit, I mean, that's great, but it's really difficult to target a particular distance if you don't know what the target or the plan towards that actually looks like. Now, the caveat to this, or the exception to this, is perhaps you're in a particular part of your training where you're coming off an injury, you're coming off an illness, you're returning to running. Maybe the best thing for you right now is to say, well, my goal for the next 6 months or 3 months is just to train consistently without injury, without niggles, and just gradually seeing my body, my cardiovascular system respond to this light, zone two, easy, conversational pace running. And that forms a real foundation. In fact, that's really where I've been for the last 18 weeks, the last 4 months. I had a lot of trouble with calf strains yesterday for a number of reasons. A lot of the reasons, in fact, I'm going to go over today. But my goal, I quickly realized I was rushing the process. I had no clarity, or I had a plan, but my plan was on too short a time frame. Even though I knew this logically, emotionally, I thought, oh, you know what, logic can step aside for a moment. Unfortunately, logic won again. My emotions were forced to take a back seat. And what I realized after speaking to a number of people on the podcast, like the Doctors of Running, was that the plan that I had was too short a time frame. And so my goal for the first few weeks was just to consistently lay down some zone two running, like I just spoke about, build your confidence there. I also, as a result, because it was calf specifically for me, had to go in and do some real calf specific work. But just on Sunday, I completed my 10th week in a row of 50 kilometers or above, and I'm going to start making some incremental changes now, but I'm going to speak about that in just a moment. So clarify your plan, clarify your goal race, or clarify the part of your training process that you're in right now. Now, the next step in the plan is dealing with the excitement, because it is true, when you clarify the plan, something emotionally feels good. You have a vision, you have a target, you have a focus point. And with that focus comes a real extreme motivation. And a lot of the time, if that goal race is 9 months down the track, so many of the athletes that I work with are like, all right, I'm so pumped to get out and train. Now I know what it is that we're aiming at. And as a result, if we're not careful, if we're not keeping ourselves accountable, we'll go out, and with that excitement, we'll start just absolutely smashing our training. We'll be running at a pace that, you know, it might feel good one day and it might feel bad another day, but we lose track of what each run's requirement is, and intensity just becomes our overall plan, because we think, all right, if we've got 9 months to reach our goal, surely if in 1 month I'm really close to where we need to be, that's a better plan. Unfortunately, that particular approach is one that I think nearly I would say 98% of all runners, whether you're community level runner or whether you're an elite level runner, make. This is something that I would love to sit down with so many Olympians and say, oi, what are you actually doing here? The way that you're approaching this is crazy. Like, I know when it comes to actual race day, you're faster than me, but on a practical level, I can see that the emotions that are driving your motivation are going to lead you to injury. And unfortunately, I mean, you don't have to be a genius to see it. The athlete who can stay uninjured or niggle-free for a six-month or more period of time is the exception. And the reason for that is a lot of us have no clarity on what level of intensity, how often we should be doing. My rule is if you can do less intensity, perhaps even be slightly less fit than where you could possibly be, but you can tie consistent weeks and months of training together, you're going to be far better off than the athlete who just goes out for a month, smashes intensity, smashes the work ethic or the motivation side of thing, and then after a month has to take a month off because they're dealing with an Achilles injury or a calf strain or some strain or some other form of frustration. So there's a number of ways we can navigate this within the plan, but essentially, with any athlete that I work with, there's a few styles of training that I'm trying to incorporate into the week. The first one is we're going to do like a longer, slower run, particularly if you're training for any form of endurance event. Obviously, depending on the event that the athlete's actually training for is going to dictate what that actual training run looks like in terms of pace, intensity, terrain. We'll also look at things like speed endurance. Obviously, we want some form of intensity, but we want it to be in its particular place. We also want some recovery runs. We want to formulate some kind of partnership between a variety of different training styles that makes sure you're not only getting what you need aerobically, getting what you need in terms of intensity, but also recovering in between sessions. So as an example, myself at the moment, over the last 10 weeks, what I've been doing is my Sunday run had been 18K, remembering that my goal is hopefully the Melbourne Marathon, which is still 5 or so months away. That run has just been 18K. Then on Tuesday, I do a very easy recovery run of about 10 to 12K. The idea there is there's no pace, there's no intensity. It is usually the run that I feel the worst on and I'm running about 5.5 minute K pace. Then on Thursday, that's my more intense day. This is where I'm hitting like a zone 3 to 4, sometimes even scratching the surface of a 5 heart rate zone training where I'm doing either like a monofartlek or some kilometer reps or some tempo running. That's where I get more of my intensity. Then on Saturday, it's the same as Tuesday. It's a very easy recovery run. A lot of people hear that and they go, yeah, Tice, that is so underwhelming. Sure, but I've tied together 2.5 months of consistent running and the progress that you can see in that 10 weeks of training, you can't argue with. The improvement's there. Now, as a result of my body handling that 50K plus a week of training really well, I've given myself the tick of approval to be able to add another 10K midweek run. And my goal there is to tie that together for the next 10 weeks. Ideally, my aerobic fitness catches up really, really quick. I get aerobically fit fast. The problem with me is my peripheral fitness or the essentially like my body's ability to handle the training, my joints, my calves, that needs the time to catch up, which is why I'm taking a slow process. But the beauty is I've got until October to actually be where I want to be. And even October, I'm not planning it being at full flight. It's just going to be my first attempt at a marathon in 6 years, all going well. And so that beauty of having a plan lets me say, hey, Tice, you don't need to be doing anything crazy right now. In fact, you don't have to be doing anything crazy for the next couple of years. Right now, it's all about building up. A lot of athletes, including myself for so many years, don't have the capacity to actually emotionally be able to hold themselves back. They go, oh, I've just got to do everything right now because I need to be fit. Proof's in the pudding. You take that approach, you're going to be injured. If you need more help with this, I would love to work with you on a more personal level. If you're looking for personal coaching, I've got a variety of ways that we can work together, regardless of where you're at, whether it's as a guide, I'll take your hand and show you the training, or if you're a bit more experienced as a sounding board. I've linked the description, I've linked my coaching packages in the description to this episode if you want to have a look, but that's just some food for thought. The other way that you can actually monitor your own progress is one that you've probably seen me learn in real time here. I've been a little old school with my approach to training for so long in the sense that I've always just gone by feel. But my sense of feel is so based on if I feel good that day, the pace will be faster. If I feel bad that day, the pace will be slower. The heart rate monitor has been one of the most significant changes to my training in the last 6 months that I can possibly remember. And it's so beautiful because it keeps me accountable for what the run is supposed to be. I no longer am guided by time or pace, despite how it makes my Strava look. I'm guided by heart rate. If my heart rate says you're working too hard on a recovery run, then I slow it down. If that means I'm running 6 minute K pace, so be it. I don't care. The idea with those runs is recovery. That is the beauty of a plan. You've got to keep your easy days easy. You've got to keep your hard days hard. And you've just got to see that slow progress take place. The second step, once you've got that first one under control, is the flip side of that coin. We completely ignore intensity. Now, this is one that I think is more targeted towards that marathon style runner, the marathon runner who, your classic shuffler, the athlete who's just out there day in, day out, and they've got the motivation, they've got the drive, they love being out there for hours and hours and hours, but unfortunately, they've turned into that marathon shuffler because they've completely ignored the benefits of any kind of intensity. Now, I think the beauty with some form of intensity, if you followed Matt Fitzgerald's 80-20 principle for training, I think you would understand. The beauty with having 20% of your work at a slightly faster rate is both physical and psychological. One thing that I've noticed since I did a monofartlek last week, it was the fastest one I'd done for a while for 20 minutes. I did 5.7K, which is like 3 minutes, 29K pace, which was great for me. But the beauty with that session, even though perhaps I pushed it a little harder than what I should have, which was the first time I'd made that mistake in a long time, I got excited out there, was that when I go out for a run at 5 minute K pace now, it really, truly does feel like a jog. Now, this is a double-edged sword because sometimes this is where the intensity or the love of intensity creeps back in. You go, oh, if running that fast makes me feel that good when I run slow, then I'll do more intensity. This is where we have to play that balance well. For me, at the moment, 1 day a week, as I said, is really good when it comes to that intensity. Unless you're an elite level runner trying to qualify for the Olympics, I think a lot of us underestimate the power of just one hard session a week. And it forces us to have that balance. But the truth is, psychologically, if you can go out, if your goal is to run at 7 minute K pace and you can go out and do some work at 5.5 minute K pace, that longer, slower work at that pace psychologically feels easy. It really does feel like a jog. I also think it's important with the way that we structure intervals, and it's hard to give a one size fits all approach to this because there's so many different ways to approach interval training. Obviously, depending on your goal race and depending on where you're at in your return to the sport or your experience doing intervals. And that is, sometimes it is better to go out and do intervals at mixed paces. So one thing that I've been doing, for example, over the course of the last few months is in what is now my 8x1K session, when I do that every third week on a Thursday, that session starts at, okay, the first four are only at half marathon pace. That is a very relaxed pace. And if it's not, then it's not half marathon pace. The beauty there, it welcomes your body back to more intense running. The last four, I'll do at 10K pace. A lot of athletes will go out and they'll go, all right, I'm just going to do this at 10K pace or faster. In fact, I'll do it as fast as I possibly can off a minute recovery. It turns into a race-like effort. So you don't have to treat this Thursday session or this one session a week as just flat out intensity. You can even work into your more intense sessions. I always say to the athletes I coach, I would rather you finish the last couple of reps feeling like you could do a few more reps after that than finishing that session on your hands and knees and leaving you with far more recovery to be done before your next run, whether that's the next day or a couple of days after. The next thing I want to talk about is the athlete who is so sporadic with their training. One thing athletes do, this comes under a variety of things, but I really believe it's excitement, it's emotion, and it's just a lack of structure. The sporadic trainer is one who'll go out there for a week or two, or maybe even a month, and they'll tie together 1 month of training. They'll get incredibly fit. a lot of the time these athletes seem to be the most talented. They're the ones who they don't necessarily require a huge amount of work to get great results. I think this also is a double-edged sword in the sense that I often think that work ethic and commitment to training is a talent in itself. One thing that frustrates me as a coach, as an athlete, and just having gone to school with so many talented athletes, there was one kid who was on the brink of, I think he played for Melbourne Victory, which is like one of the higher levels of soccer here in Victoria and Australia. But he was in and out of the team. And the reason for that was he had a reputation for being, he just didn't work. He wasn't consistent. And I remember speaking to his dad, and part of the reason for that, he believed, was he was so naturally talented that forever he was just streets ahead of the opposition based on talent alone, that when it actually came to doing the work, he'd just never been forced to do it. And so if you're that athlete, I would really encourage you to stop being so arrogant about your own running talent, because the truth is, sure, that might look after you from time to time, but if your goal is to actually get the most out of yourself, it's really, really important that you get beyond your talent. Your talent will get you so far, but the beauty is it always seems to be the athletes who are a combination of talented, hardworking, and consistent who see the best training results. So don't be that athlete who goes out there sporadically, trains for a month, and then forgets about it. Now, the flip side of this coin is if you feel as though you don't have talent, if you feel as though that you're a little bit less naturally gifted than the athletes that I'm just referring to, this is a huge area that you guys generally dominate. And I would encourage you to just stick to it, because this is a very talent in itself. The idea of actually rocking up day in, day out is a talent. And it's a talent that the athletes, a lot of athletes with the natural levels of talent, really struggle in. And so I think this is an area that you can really, really drill into. The other thing that you need to be smart with here, if you want to make up a little bit of time between the athletes who are more naturally talented than you, is being very smart with the balance between your training. You have the reputation generally of being that hard worker who will never, ever back off, but doesn't necessarily have any clear plan. So regardless of what side of the coin you're on there, it is so important that you actually figure out a way to complement whichever side of that coin that you're actually on. Talented athletes, stop being so arrogant. Less talented athletes, make up that gap that you feel as though or you think you lack between the more talented athletes with consistency and a smart training plan. The second last one is nutrition and hydration. This goes without saying. I love what Gordo Byrne has to say about this. In fact, I'm going to tag a 60-minute podcast that he did on his YouTube channel. It's actually a chapter from his book to help you with your nutrition. Now, I know I'm not a dietitian, I'm not a nutritionist, and I know there is some really heated opinions on what is the most effective way to eat, to train, to fuel, whatever. I can say from my own experience or my own approach is I like to eat as close to a natural whole foods diet as I possibly can. The more I can avoid supplements gels, sugary drinks, lollies in the name of energy replacement, the better. Now, obviously, there's a certain period in my build-up when I'm starting to do longer runs where some extra nutrition, some gels and drinks are required. But my big focus throughout the week is making sure I'm just eating food. Here at the Popplestone household, we eat organic. We eat foods as close to its natural state as possible. I follow the classic Michael Pollan rule. If my great-grandma wouldn't have recognized it as food, I personally won't eat it, or very, very rarely. My wife calls me a little bit OCD with this area. It's an area I'm happy to be OCD with. I really love the idea of just treating my body with respect, for lack of a better term. I don't know how you say that without sounding like a hippie, but for me, that's just plenty of fruits, plenty of vegetables. Obviously, carbs is the fuel of choice for me with my marathon training. So I'm trying to figure out, hey, what is a good natural whole food that sits in my tummy well the night before a run? Unfortunately for me, I've just said all that. Unfortunately for me, I feel as though pasta is probably the exception to that rule. On a Saturday night, I'll often eat a bowl of pasta, despite the fact I know it's not necessarily great for me. It is great for my long run the next day. So as much as I can, I'll get my nutrition out of whole foods. In saying that, if you're in a 12-week build-up for a marathon plan, you're out there for a 35K run, there are exceptions to that rule. Obviously, the best of the best are taking gels, the best of the best are taking carb drinks, the best of the best are using sodium tablets. I'm not going to argue with them. Hydration is the other factor. Obviously, I'm affiliated with Precision Fuel and Hydration. They're the brand of choice for me, partly because they've just looked after me for so long, but also partly because the gels that I use when I do use them sit so well in my tummy. What I'm referring to there is their little 30-gram carb gels that I'll use. I was taking them for a while, just even through my 18K runs. I felt as though it was at the intensity that I'm doing these runs, it was a little counterintuitive. I never really felt like I was that tapping into my energy reserves at the end to need them. So I think for me, sort of 24 to 25K and above is where I'll start using those more consistently. But essentially, nutrition, hydration, do some work there. Figure out, hey, are you actually drinking enough water? I think so often running, like so many things, has this reputation of attracting people with all the gear and no idea. You don't need all the gear when it comes to improving running performance. You need consistency and a structured training plan. When it comes to nutrition and hydration, you don't need to figure out first, hey, what's the best gel? What's the best drink? How many carbs should I be having per hour? What sodium should I be replacing? You need to be drinking plenty of water as a start point. Now, I know there's obviously a lot of science that contradicts that when it comes to the day before a race. You also don't want to be taking on so much water that it means you're just flushing your system of all the essential minerals and things that you need to actually absorb hydration more effectively. But for your average day-to-day runner, so many of us lack just any form of consistent hydration throughout the day that is a great place to start. So before we start getting to all the bells and whistles of nutrition, hydration, training gear, let's make sure that our foundation is good. So much can be improved just by changing the foundation. Now, the next one is running technique. Obviously, the efficiency of movement is huge here when it comes to improving running performance. You have a look at the best runners in the world, and there is no surprise that the best runners in the world also double as the most efficient looking runners in the world. You can be an untrained eye in the world of distance running and look at an Eliud Kipchoge and go, oh, I see something's really good there. You can have an untrained eye and see Usain Bolt and go, oh, he looks fantastic. If you're in the football world, you can look at an athlete like Nick Daicos and go, okay, there's something special about that guy. You can see the best of the best have a way of doing the difficult things effortlessly. And when it comes to energy efficiency, one of the most effective ways is to make sure that we're carrying our body in an effective way, that we're not storing up tension, that we're not using our upper body in a way which is limiting our ability to absorb oxygen, shortening our stride. There's a number of ways we can do that. If you're interested in getting some technique analysis, we've got the online technique analysis where we use the OnForm app, which means that you can film yourself at a variety of paces from a variety of angles. And I'll sit down and offer an in-depth technique analysis with some really simple practical cues to help you eliminate stress, find more efficiency as you're running. There's also a guy called Lawrence Van Lingen, who an athlete of mine, Mark, is a really big fan of. This guy gets into the philosophy of it at a deeper level. This isn't something that I'm doing as a competitor or just trying to make money. So I'm happy for you to go and do it with whoever it is you want to see. But this is something that I swear is so important for the athletes who are trying to make significant running improvements. Obviously, there's things, the one percenters, we've mentioned nutrition, hydration, but sleep and massage and just dealing with stress and anxiety that naturally comes up in our life is a huge thing. If your life has a foundation of stress at the moment, I would really encourage you to figure out some simple, practical ways to help alleviate that stress, whether it's reducing the hours from your life, from your work life, or finding time to meditate, or if you haven't been exercising, do that. Speak to someone, because the idea of trying to exert yourself at a physical level at a high intensity when your baseline stress levels is already high is emotionally exhausting. So if you haven't got on top of that, you're not going to be seeing the performance results that you can. Also, don't be beat up by the fact that you're going through that. Like anything, life is a roller coaster of highs and lows for all of us. Each and every one of us, regardless of how optimistic we look or how negative we look, go through periods of highs and periods of lows. It's a natural part of the human experience, I think. I mean, we're imperfect, aren't we? And so I say that to say, hey, don't beat yourself up if the person at work next to you at the moment looks as though they've got it all together. One thing that I've learned over the last 37 years is they definitely don't. And it's always nice when you hear an optimistic person go, or a person who seems positive go, oh, no, no, I've been through some dark times as well. So if you are in that period of lowness at the moment, for whatever reason, I mean, life throws some curveballs at you. The beauty is the light at the end of the tunnel is a cliche that exists for a reason. If you can bear with it, learn through it, you're going to be more equipped to handle it the next time it comes around. And eventually, I mean, from my own experience, the thing that used to bother me, or the things that used to bother me 10 or 15 years ago, now seem to not even really raise my awareness because I've just developed the clarity or the tools to be able to deal with those situations. And so the same is true for you. And so wherever you're at in your running journey, there's a little bit of food for thought. As I said, I would love to work with you if that's something you're interested in doing. If you'd like to have a Zoom call, we could line that up for free, chat about where you're at, what your goals are, what you'd like to see accomplished in your own running career. If I can be a guide or a sounding board for you throughout that journey, would absolutely love that. Also, if you're listening overseas, you might not know this is a podcast, or Relaxed Running is aimed more at just than distance running, but at athletes in running-based sports as well. So if you're here as an athlete from running-based sport, you're looking for preseason programs, or you're a coach looking for guidance for your team, make sure you jump across to the Relaxed Running website. That is a big focus of ours as well, to make sure that preseason running training for your running-based sport is well and truly looked after for every athlete on the field. To alleviate like a whole heap of that stress. But for now, that's all I wanted to say. Show notes and links that I've mentioned in the episode, the link, you know what I'm trying to say, don't you? Are in the description to this episode. So click that. But for now, guys, happy training, happy racing if that's what you're up to. And I'll see you all here again next week.